My name is Hallie Morse. I'm here with Gilda Miros at the Actors Fund. Today's date is Monday, November 14th, 2016. It is approximately 11 in the morning. We are in New York City at the Actors Fund. This is oral history number 2 of 3. Wonderful to see you again, Gilda.
I love seeing you, Hallie. Thank you so much. God bless you. And thank you, whoever's listening, for this legacy project that's so important in our history. Thank you so much. So in Spanish, it's Gilda with a G, Miros with an accent. In English, Gilda Miros, whatever. Carmen Santiago, the girl that was born in PR, Puerto Rican, New Yorker. Okay, last time we were speaking about, I want to review, my cast is very important to me. My mother's name, Monserrate. I want you to read Monserrate. Okay, she's very important to me, and I have to repeat it because I owe my career to my mother's faith, support, guidance, and even spiritually now, I feel that she helps me. Anyway, my sons, Antonio A. Miros, Antonio Adonis Miros is a casting director now in Hollywood. He was an actor, gave it up, but he is my firstborn. And my little boy, who's now 45, my older boy is 49 and 45 now in 2016. His name is Karim Miros, and he is publicity. He's in publicity, very successful, both my sons, thank God. I raised them, repeat, by myself, mommy and daddy, and working mommy. Okay, with the help of my mother. That's why I have them credits, number one stars. I have a granddaughter who's 10, Vienna Sky Dates Miros. Those are the cast of characters. Okay, now, go ahead.
So we want to, talk about some other people that are influences in your life, in your career as an actress. Some of the most important and influential cast of characters that you recall inspiring you, and in what ways were they inspiring?
Okay, I mustn't forget my brother Nelson, Nel Miros, who at 70 years old is still doing doo-wop. He sings. So we are a family of performers, and we have great health, and I thank God for that. Before, in the previous recording, I spoke about my success as a radio performer. I will go to your question, Hallie. And I must mention my engineer, who was with me like 10 years, Eli Mendez, who was like dancing with me. He followed me, I followed him, and it was a team effort when we were number one in New York. Then I left him because I went to Florida. I spoke about that. Then I went to Spain to work, came back to New York, and went back to Florida. Okay, and later we'll talk about the most recent cycle in my life. Inspiration, because Hallie, you need somebody to stimulate you. You know, performers have bad days. You don't get the role. You went to a casting call. They said no. And then you say, what's going to happen? I don't have any money. Where's the contract coming from? You seem lost sometimes. And you need someone to say, don't worry, it's going to be okay. It's going to happen. Keep on pushing. This is just a bad moment. You're talented. That's the stimulation most performers need. And I think we need it most than most people. Because we're very sensitive. Our art is like a little baby that we want to share with the world. It's a very personal thing. It isn't like losing a job, any job. It isn't just any job. Do you know when I go to the theater and I see other performers, I say, I'm so happy I'm a performer. We're blessed. We can bring joy to the world. What would be the world without art? Without art? Could you imagine? Art is in these walls, the painters, the people that designed this table, designed the architects. Everything is art. The clothing you're wearing, these people went through a lot to study. Study, that's what I wanted to mention. When I was in Mexico City, that my mom would send me a little money and I would work a little money and we did it together. That's why she's so important in my successes. I studied my vocalization, my speech, we had a lot of classes about acting, and we had to go to the classes. And sometimes you don't feel like getting up and going to the class. You have to. You have to polish your tools. Very important. Okay. Wake up in the morning and say, look, I had a great night last night, but this is a new day. What am I going to do for my career today? If you want a career, if you're a true artist, because people sometimes go into the arts just to fool around, to have a good time. Fame is not overnight, darlings. And if you get a part, you have to do the best you can because you can be replaced. Okay? Very important. You need a good agent. A lot of agents are liars. They're money grabbers. Know what the business is about. Okay? What is this business? Commercials, voiceovers, stage, theater, films, documentaries. There's so many avenues. And when you never stop growing. Maybe you're sick and tired of doing theater. Do a little voiceover. Do narrations. Do commercials. Be flexible. But know how to use your voice.
Yeah.
Are you using it? Well, go ahead, Holly.
I want to talk about this more because you have been able to do all of those other things beyond theater. So I definitely want to talk about that. But going back to moments of inspiration, was there a time that you felt that you were on the verge ever of giving up or didn't want to perform
anymore?
Yes,
when I told you that when I came back from Vietnam and I came back from the documentaries I was doing, I went to Massachusetts with my kids. I said, I'm giving it up. No more. I've had it. I can't support my kids being an actress. No more glamour. I love the glamour life. We have the ego. No more. My kids are number one. I went with them. Came back. That's when radio came into my life. And with radio, I raised my kids. People say, and then you ask me, did you go back to theater? Did you do theater? Yes, I did. You never forget about it. You always want to do theater. But you know, theater is hours of rehearsal. After 4 hours on the air in radio, 4 hours, that's what the union allows you. But not only because somebody produced it, I produced my own show. So if someone doesn't come in, how do you fill an hour, 2 hours and 3 hours and 4 hours live on the air? You got to be on your toes. I started to use the phone. I would call other countries and interview people from other countries on the air because the station allowed me. It was a luxury then. Okay. But anyway.
Flexibility. I would love to know what that transition was like. What you brought from your days of acting, how that
was important because you mentioned this
air.
Before when we left. I applied my knowledge and experience with theater and film to radio. I saw it as another performance, but I was never hung up on myself. In other words, I was natural. If I wanted to laugh, I laugh. I spoke with a natural voice like you're listening to me now. Not, hello, no, I want to be sexy and I want to play the next hit of the day. No, anybody can do that nonsense. A lot of women do that and a lot of guys do it. They come, oh, listen, this is Joe and let's go on with the hair. No, natural. Stanislavski, the natural method I applied to radio. What happens? I see it like a block. They gave me 4 hours. I'm not gonna do 4 hours by myself. I was a DJ. I was the first Latina DJ. A DJ, you just spin records, put a commercial, give the time, the weather. You go running, you get the AP, which you that's what you used to do, or get a cartridge, you put in the ID for the station, and you put another record. That is being a DJ. I was a DJ, but I had too much to give. So I started to create a format on radio where Joe comes in. I interview him about, and you know, I had something that reaching out to Hispanics about nutrition. This is important. This is the 70s in New York City. I got a girl from the Department of Nutrition, American Public Health Association. We were so successful. Her name was Clotilde Sayas. I still pray for her every day. She was with the Peace Corps, because I do my prayers every day, I want you to know. Talking about faith. I meditate. I do not prayers like Hail Mary, full of God. No. I speak and say what I feel, and I expect inspiration. We did nutrition every day on the air. 3 minutes. She would record it with Eli beforehand. We had a little cartridge. And a certain slot, we put it in, and people would learn, don't eat so much fat. We were helping our people. Before you say, we want to do a little thing on nutrition, they say, oh, no, that's a no. No, that's a good. Because Thanksgiving, how to prepare your turkey. Christmas, how do you do your pork? How do they cook in Peru, the potatoes? Anyway, then I had health. I picked up a lot of names and numbers and called cardiologists. And I called in whatever, specialists for diabetes. And I would have them on the air. And I would open the phones and they would call in. This is all performing. And I learned this from theater and doing films. And it became a success. The last play I did, and this is something I'm going back to, talking about credits, Premier Maldonado, Puerto Rican. I told you about he was the ad man. He wrote a play for me. It was the last play I did. Remember I spoke about going to Puerto Rico every weekend? He helped me because, listen to this, Holly. Before many actresses had perfumes, I had my own system. From my success, I had Sistema de Belleza Miros. You could see here a line. It says, night cream, restorer cream, musk hand and body moisturizer, facial tonic, deep cleansing lotion, daytime moisturizer. My whole line. Wow. Look at this. I went to Mexico City. I went to Puerto Rico, did commercials. And look at the perfume.
So you created your own line?
No, I didn't. Pfizer created it for me.
Wow.
Because I was so popular with the Latinos.
Wow. So how are you,
here is,
how
it says
are you able
Miros
to do this?
Musk.
How were you able to
because of Premier Maldonado. This is why I mentioned him. Premier Maldonado was like a genius of publicity in Puerto Rico. And he knew of my fame, of my popularity, but not because I was gorgeous and fabulous and sexy, but because I was real. And women, it was like I was in their home every day. You know what's wonderful about radio that used to be? You're in somebody's home every day. You visit. You talk to them while they're cooking, while they're cleaning, while they're changing the kids, when they're riding in the car going to. You're with them. You are their friend. People don't realize that. That's why your voice goes into their brain and works miracles. That's all you had to work with, your voice, not your sexiness, okay? Anyway, so he recommended me to Pfizer. They were looking for somebody who was great, and they did the whole thing for me. They produced the whole line. The thing is, I never followed because whatever reasons, I got involved in this, I got involved in that, in the radio, and then I didn't go to... You know, when you work in radio or in TV, you don't control your life, Holly, because you have to go to cocktail parties. I don't want to go. You have to go. You have to go to an event. What are you promoting? You're promoting a soda. You got to go. You have to go to a fair because it's Christmas and everybody wants to see that they're giving out turkeys.
Wow. What was that like for you to have that?
And then two little boys.
To have that sort of requirement and also to have that fan base, right? And what was your interaction
God I was never, I didn't know how far I had gone. I was not, my mother would say, you don't realize how far you go. And my mother said something to me, at the beginning of the show, why don't you read a little meditation? A minute and a half, my mother, without being a performer, she says, read something that will stimulate people. A little something, a pickup. I said, that's a good idea. She got me a little book. And I read one little, and I did it every day, opening my show first thing. And people, sometimes I went to a doctor's office, for example. He said to me, a doctor, you know something? I can't hear your show every day, but I never miss your meditation. At 10 in the morning. Would you believe this? I said, Mom, look how far. But I didn't realize it, so it never got me.
Was it always grounded. Your own words that
no,
you
no,
say?
I read. Okay. It wasn't my own words. No, I'm not that intellectual. But I knew how to pick and choose. And it wasn't a religious thing. It wasn't go to church and pray. No, it's, hey, make a lemonade out of a lemon. Things like that.
Right.
A minute long.
Right.
You know?
Inspiration.
Love triumphs hate. Things can get better. Don't give up. Things like that. Inspiration. And it worked. But anyway, but I was always grounded. That helped me, honey. I didn't feel conceited. I felt like I was blessed. I was reachable. And this I owe to the theater. My diction, very important. In English, it's not perfect. You can tell I'm Latina. You can tell the Bronx accent sometimes. But in Spanish, you couldn't tell what country I came from. I learned that in Mexico City. You can't have a Puerto Rican accent or a Cuban accent or a Mexican accent, Dominican. Nobody wants to know that. They just want to know, did I hear her correctly? Did she speak correctly? Is it a clear message? We have lost that in radio. Hmm. In Spanish radio. People that are on radio, and this is not criticism, this is an observation, don't care how they speak. They just go out and speak. And they use slang, and they use dirty words, and they use expressions that are not good for the children to listen to. Because when you're in somebody's house, the kids are playing, they're picking up. You're their little teacher. And if you say a bad word three times, you're going to repeat it like little parrots. But anyway, getting back to the theater, go.
Right. Well, I'd love to hear about your vocal journey, your training as a vocalist, and how it has informed your career, because there's no doubt that it has, and how you ended up being, you know, famous. Your voice was famous, and how it helped you, how your vocal
it's
training
interesting
guided
because,
you.
You know, the Metropolitan Museum of Art did two, about the voice, two important exhibitions. One was Tutankhamun, the Egyptian pharaoh, the pharaoh. And I was the voice for that in the Metropolitan. And I said to myself, you know, isn't that something? I was so shy. I didn't think I was talented. I was very, I had a lot of, I still do. I'm still shy. You know, a lot of performers are shy.
Yeah.
They just, something happens, it transforms. The light goes on me, hi. And I heard I would take the audio guide. That's what they call it, the audio guide. On the right, you see the pharaoh when he was a child. And on the left, you see his tomb and whatever. I said, I'm so happy. I never knew I would reach this. There's something here about theater. Teatro Casino, 1966. This was in Willis Avenue in the Bronx. I was raised around this area. And here I'm the star of a play, a local play during a passion play. The first plays that were performed ever everywhere were the passion plays with the religious themes. The Latinos used to have the passion plays. And here I said to myself, look, where I came. After dreaming about it, I brought the theater to Willis Avenue in the Bronx. I was able to, after La Barca Sin Pescador in Theater Row, I did La Gran Decisión. This is Intar, which is on West 42nd Street. It says here, La Gran Decisión is a winner, November 2, 1978. I'm telling you this because the growth of a performer is When you see the big picture, someday you sit back and you say, where did I go from A to B to C to D? And I was evolving, I was growing. But you don't only want to grow as a performer. You want to grow as a person. Am I a better person? Could I see myself when I was 20? Now that I am 70, can I see this? There's something good happen, and I do. Now, downtown is Festival Latino at the Public Theater. To me, this is an achievement. And I brought a picture with Joseph Pop. He said, this is fantastic because Women Without Men was presented there. That you said you went to the Public Theater. It's like an institution in New York. From Willis Avenue to the Public Theater. It's an extreme. And I was so proud. So proud. Mexico City, here I am performing in a play. And these are things that I don't say because it's their credit to say, oh, she has such an ego. No, I don't. It's not ego. It's a fact. Why are you listening to me today? Because I did. I did. I'm an achiever, I think. Not because I am internationally famous. Although, when you go online, I say, oh, I saw this film. I didn't watch my films. I didn't want to watch. I'm always criticizing myself. I don't watch my films. I did it, forgot it. That's it. Because I want to be better, always. I want to be working till the day I die, Holly. I tell my son. And you've seen that I produced the audiobook now and another audiobook now. And I did, in Town Hall, I did Poetisas Hispanoamerica, which is all about the female poets in Latin America. I did a reading with music, and it's going to be on audio. And I say, I don't get tired because to me, it's therapy. Creating is therapy. And if they tell me tomorrow, you're dying, you have a week, I tell my son, Antonio, Tony, bring me a recorder. I want to record my passing. Not because it's tragic, but because it's happy. A lot of people, I want you to know I'm a caregiver. I was a caregiver for 11 years. You know what a caregiver is? After doing everything I've done, I took care of my mom until she passed. And I took care of my dad until he passed. A caregiver, and then my father was with hospice, laying in a bed like a corpse for a year. I didn't go anywhere except the bank and supermarket for a year. And you have the people from hospice, God bless them. The doctor comes, the nurse comes, they help you, but you're in charge of somebody. And my father would say, I just saw my mother that came to say hello. I said, really? Those are the angels that are helping you. And he said, I saw my cousin. I said, really? Because he couldn't move, but he could speak. He was blind. And although my mom was psychic and she saw angels and everything before she passed, I say to myself, why do I want to record my passing for? Because I'm sure I'll see things and I want to record them, leave them on. So what you're doing today, you are an instrument, Holly. This is an instrument. We're leaving a legacy. This is important. Next question.
Was there ever a time that you struggled with your voice?
Yes. When I was on the air every day and then going to the events where you have to be the MC, and then I got a lot of recognition and I got wonderful. I got medals. I was honored many times. I have a lot of them. Look, for example, Colgate Women's Games, Madison Square Garden, 1980. I was a guest moderator, Ringling Brothers Circus, Madison Square. I was the guest ringmaster. Mundo Real, public television in Boston, 1976, New Jersey Dateline. These things that I did, besides the radio, were burning my vocal cords. I was strained. Plus, when you're a performer, you have a lot of stress. Because you always worry, will this be good? You want to be the best. especially in the theater. You keep going. Have you noticed before the curtain goes up, everybody goes to the bathroom 20 times. You see all the actors one after the other because they're worried. But you have to, it's good that you're stressed because you give it, you have the energy. If you don't have that anxiety, you're flat. If you don't have any anxiety, you are flat. You don't want to be flat. Although when you go on, people give you their energy and you pick up. Anyway, so I was getting hoarse and hoarse and hoarse and I was on the air and I began to lose my voice. When I was a producer of the 65th anniversary of the Celia Cruz and Sonora Matancera performance in Madison Square Garden in 1986, I said, I was also the producer and the moderator, and I put up the money and I had a lot of problems. That made it worse. When they recorded, and it's still there, I was hoarse. I said, hello. It was, thank you for coming here. I am very grateful. I could almost speak. My friend, nose, ear, and throat specialist from the New York Infirmary, Eye, Ear, and Throat Infirmary in New York City, says you gotta give your voice a break. You gotta stop working. You gotta stop speaking for at least a week or two. You don't answer the phone. My mother would answer the phone for me. And she would take little notes, and I would write. And she was my little secretary. And I stopped doing the show. And I had guest artists do my show. Celia did my show. And this one and that one, they all did my show as guest artists. And I took a break. They had to take polyps off my vocal cords. They did it through the nose. It was not painful. I trusted, but he says to me, I don't know if you'll have your voice as you have it before. You don't know if you lose your voice. It's a risk. Surgery is always a risk. It's minor, but it's a risk. Maybe your voice will be deeper or higher, but it may be a little change. I said, I trust God. Here I go. So he operated. And it came out okay. There was nothing dangerous with my polyps. They were removed. Couldn't speak for another week or 2 weeks. And then I went back on the air, and my voice was the same. Am I blessed or am I blessed?
You are blessed.
I am blessed. Ask and you will receive.
That's right. Wow, thank you for sharing that. It's something that a lot of performers go through, and it can be very troubling.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
It was scary. It was scary because imagine if you have a top show. This is your earnings for your family, and they tell you, you don't know if you're going to have your voice. You may lose your voice. It's scary. But then you have to say, well, if I don't, what happens? There's no option, really. You know, you have to do it. You have to jump in and do it. But you take care. You watch. Okay? No smoking. Why are you smoking? Why are you smoking if you use your vocal cords? Your breath. Your rest. You know, you got to do breathing exercises. And you can't use your voice like this on the top. You got to center your voice. Where is your voice? Is it down? Is it normal? Are you using it correctly? Because if you go like this, you're not using it correctly. I don't think so. Unless you were really born this way. Or if you want to do this because you want to be so mysterious and fabulous, but you're not using it. No, it's just me.
Yeah. Would you say that you were more careful after your surgery?
Well, you have to rest. Make sure you don't overdo it. The stress, careful, yes. Careful, yes. Do follow the instructions. Take a little vacation. You know? And if you get upset, don't scream on the top of your lungs. Ah! You have to follow instructions. So, this whole first still. That was it. What else?
So I'd love to know about things that you do to keep yourself occupied these days. It's very important. Obviously, we need to be engaged as performers, and you know, you are a very much outgoing person.
Well, this is interesting because when I was taking care of my mom started to get sick when she was 85. She passed when she was 90. We lived in Florida, thank God. When she started to get sick, my mom, I said, I'll take care of you, Mom. You took care of me, I want to take care of you. Because she was my buddy. We traveled together. I went to Spain with my mom, to Italy and London. And we were invited to the palace with the king in Spain for the celebration of, what is it? Discovery of America. And now I'm a friend with my sons. Is that amazing? That's beautiful. We have that relationship. Anyway, I stayed in Florida with my mom. And my mom says, go out. You know, I'll take care of myself. In part, she couldn't walk very well. She had diabetes and heart condition, whatever, and asthma. I stayed home. And then I started to write. Is that amazing? I finished my first book, Taking Care of My Mom. And I published it. Taking care of my mom. Then we moved in away from Miami. I was in South Beach for many years. Then I went up to the north, away from the hurricanes. And when we got there, we saw little ducks. My mom says, I see those little ducks. They're so pretty. She said, I'm going to write a little story about ducks and how it's important for kids to wash their hands so they won't get sick. It's based on a little duck. I said, Mom, yeah, write the story. A bilingual story, and I'll do the pictures. So I did the pictures. We published a book. My mom wrote the book. I did the pictures. My mom passed. And after she passed, I published the book. It's called Hortense and Her Happy Ducklings. Bilingual story, which then I donated to the Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital. And to other hospitals for children to learn, you have to wash your hands so you won't get sick. That was my mom and me together. My mom passed. My father, who had not been with us ever since I was a little girl, was left alone. In other words, he lost his first wife, he lost his second wife, he lost his third wife. So we rescued him and brought him to Florida from Queens, New York. And he was 90. Then my mom passed. They were like brothers then, you know. It was not a marriage. They were like brothers. She says, I'll help him like a good sister. He's a good brother. So my mom passed. I stayed with my father. But while I was taking care of my father, I published my mom's memories called Memorias de los Espíritus y Mi Madre. My mom was a medium. She was afraid I told you to say that she was psychic. Because she was raised Catholic, strict Roman Catholic. You weren't allowed to say like, oh my God, they're spirits. No, they have just to be, I don't know, only angels. Well, angels are spirits. They're invisible. You don't see them. They're invisible. Anyway, we're spirits living a human journey. Anyway, when she passed, I took out all her writings and I wrote the book Memorias de los Espíritus. Published it. Took me 3 years. While I was taking care of I was taking care of my dad. I wasn't performing. I did Mother Angelica live. That is true. I used to go to Alabama and I would record her. I did the dubbing for a nun that has the biggest Catholic network in the world, EWTN. I was her voice in Spanish for television, radio, and shortwave. What I do is I learn how to dub.
Skill.
It's a skill. You got to follow her rhythm. Anyway.
Was it always a dream of yours to publish books?
No. No. Never. I never thought I would. And then listen to this. After I did Memorias, I said, I tried to get interviewed. People didn't want to interview me because it was about spirits. there was a lot of taboos. So I said, really? Well, I'll do it in English, maybe. In English, they'll interview me. I did spirit messages to my mother. I published it another 2 years, taking care of my dad in Florida. Then I published In Contact with My Mother, En Contacto con Mi Madre. Then I published Mystical Wings, A las Místicas. Then, before my father passed, I started working on my audiobook based on my interviews. And I published, it's called, what is it called? Oh my goodness, goodness. De la Montaña Venimos, Iconos Latinoamericanos, which became text, e, and now an audiobook, available in Audible. Let me put in my little plug in there. And there were, oh, this is all on Amazon. Then, now I publish Celia Cruz, Sonora Matancera, Mis Mejores Entrevistas de Radio, and I'm going to publish my Poetisas de Hispanoamérica. And that's my life till now. So I made good use. Your question was, what did I do during all this time? I published books.
That's incredible.
That's it. I'm ready for the big trip. Happy, blessed. Then the Smithsonian came into my life because of my broadcasting career. Then the Legacy Project came into my life, which is this fabulous way to preserve history. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to be recording also for CUNY. The Puerto Rican Studies is going to be putting my life in oral archives. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I'm going to have just two more questions before we have to wrap up. This one's a bit personal about the books that you published. Have you been able to monetize?
That's a good question. No. No. Because
so many performers, you know, obviously.
Everybody releases. It's good to release.
You know that we need other sources of income, yeah, if possible.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Well, thank God after I was retired, I have my pension, and I have a pension from the actors. I get some monies. I get, yeah. No, I get monies. I get monies, but it isn't like lots of money. I have sold books. The thing about the internet and online is my books are available in India, in England, and anywhere. Just go on and you see it. I have sold books. And I keep selling. And somebody said, oh my God, I got some more money. That's wonderful. But it isn't like I can live on it. You know what I'm saying? But I have my pensions. And I'm covered. Not rich. I was never good. Listen, Holly, it's amazing. I had a house. Another house. A condominium. Another condominium. Another condominium. Properties. Now I have none. I have none. A lot of them I sold and I lost money for different reasons. So I'm not good at finances. I have my apartment. I'm happy. I'm comfortable. And that's it. Good enough for now.
So my last question to you will be, what advice do you have for aspiring performers?
Have a dream. A good dream. Feel that you have something special to give. You're not better than anyone else. You're good, but not that good. You're good. You have something different that you want to offer. Give it to the world. I think you came here with a mission. I think we all come here with a mission. We're not here just by chance. We dumped in and we fell in. No, I don't think so. I think there's an evolution. I believe in reincarnation. I think there's a purpose to life. You came here for a reason. What is it? Besides eating and drinking and having sex. That's great because you have a body. And you could enjoy it. But what about your soul? What's happening in there? Are you learning? Are you correcting? Are you mending? There's a lot going on. You got to look at your inner so the outer will be better. And you know something? When you walk around with love, it shines. You radiate. People like you more. You communicate. You know, you know something, Holly? I have a beautiful relationship with my spiritual me. I feel at peace. I didn't feel that before. I have 2 marriages, 2 divorces. I have my lovely children that I love, and they're good, decent. Those are my best product, my best production, my children and my grandchild. But when you see, you say, what did I share with this world, good people? I was kind to my mother, to my father. Those are important things in life. Don't be selfish, which we tend to be. I think that if you look for yourself within and you find peace, you will have peace around you. You create your peace in your home. You create your peace in your environment. It's like an energy. It's manifested. And you pass it on to somebody else. Sometimes you meet somebody that's sad and you smile and treat them with love. And you see that they smile. They can't help it. They pick it up. It's like a chain. It's like a love chain. And I was able to do that through a microphone. I always felt there was something in the sound of the voice that carries and it goes into somebody's head. And it should be good. That's my philosophy.
Who do you imagine you're talking to when you talk into a microphone?
Loving people. They must be curious and... I am grateful to them for listening because something will stay with them. They'll pick up, it's a little seed. You just planted one little seed, even if it was one word. And that little seed will blossom. That's what I hope with my books. Maybe I didn't sell 1 million, but the book is going to be around when I'm gone. And the other book, and the other, and the other, and the other. In some way, somehow, somebody's going to pick it up and say, gee, this was written 50 years ago. How interesting. It's the same message. It's the same message. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Gilda. That concludes our oral history, number 2.
Hey!